We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
How about them fucking dogs? That's what I told them.
Hope it didn't take that long again. Go dogs.
Man, we know it's not going to take that long again. Kirby's back on the trail. Kirby's doing what he got to do. He got the boys all over Georgia recruiting, nationally recruiting. We got things popping off. So we know it's not going to take that long. Welcome back to the Wonder Sanford Podcast. It's your boy Lovelace. I got Big G. We got Little G getting ready to come on. Y'all know Little Graham. He getting ready to come on. G, we were just talking about the weather, man. What's, you know, you look like you're staying warm. You look good, baby.
Yeah, I was going to try to come over here and come on here today and get some sympathy from you and Graham, but, you know, y'all in similar places, the whole country cold. So I'm not by myself. And I'm pretty sure Graham's somewhere over there in the snow.
Yeah, you know Graham. Graham out there skiing. Graham, he out there playing with the dogs. I ain't doing all that, man. My kids asked me to go outside the other day. I wasn't having it.
Yeah, it's natural for him. That thing said feels like 3 degrees this morning. Listen, yeah. I didn't want nothing but to just chill out.
Yeah, man. I threw the kids outside. They was like, Dad, come on out and play. I was like, all right, go ahead. Shut the door right behind him and lock that door. You can stay out there all you want. Daddy's staying on that couch, boy. Yeah, it's too cold out there.
Y'all going out there. Going outside and play.
Facts. Hey, if you haven't done so already, down there somewhere, there's a subscribe button. Subscribe, like, join the show, join the movement. It's the 100 Sanford Podcast. Join that movement. While you're at it, go on over to dogcentral.com. Go over to Dog Central. Join that movement. Again, while you're at it, go over to the Players Lounge. Join that movement. Everything is popping off. Everything is moving. We're in the offseason, supposedly, for Georgia football, for Georgia athletics, but it's not. Because stuff is moving, baby. Stuff is moving right now around the offseason, and that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about, give a little recap of the season, but also 2024 done jumped off in a mighty, mighty way. Foss, what are you hearing out there? I know you just look excited, bro.
Listen, you know what just crossed my mind? I was like, typically, like you said, this is the offseason. Mm-hmm. You know, typically it's offseason, slow moving. There's nothing, you know, nothing much going on. But this new wave since, yes. When did it start? Since when did the portal start? 2020? 2020?
Like 2020, 2021.
Yeah, since that started, man, this is just like the NFL, baby.
It don't stop.
Free agency. Who got the check? Who could? You know what I mean?
All we need now is a combine.
It's going down. it's going down, Jack. People jumping in that portal.
Yes.
You know, and trust me when I tell you. There's some bidding going on out here. You know what I mean? Listen, it is what it is. This is the era of football we in. And, you know, a lot of it is justified. You know, like, listen, if you don't like it, take it up with the NCAA decades ago. They had a chance to make this thing fair.
Now
we're getting it real fair.
Hey, Foss, if they would have done it a long time ago, the people would have been adjusted and maybe they would have enjoyed the game just a little bit more. You know what I mean? But now it's the wild, wild west. Everybody's doing what they got to do to make money. Everybody's doing what they got to do to survive. We talked about Alabama last week. You know, our boy Nick Saban, he's no longer at Alabama. We got a new coach, a new sheriff in town in Alabama. And you know what? Alabama's losing players left and right. Oh, you know what? All we heard was, look at Georgia. How many guys was in the portal? Well, Alabama fan.
Now you see how it feels.
Yeah, how many guys in the portal, Alabama fans? And not only that, how many of your stars are in the portal? How many of your guys that really make things move and shake in Tuscaloosa are in the portal? You know, Georgia didn't have that problem, but all of a sudden you got that problem. You crying and complaining about the portal all of a sudden.
I'm telling you, people are all, oh man, so many people leaving Georgia. What's going on? What's going on? Yeah, I got especially some Bama folks that I know specifically on my Twitter timeline. Man, what's going on over there in Georgia, man? Why everybody leaving? All right. Facts. We replaced them guys. Now let me see how you do.
Replace them in a mighty way. Exactly. Let's see what those Alabama boys, how are you going to replace the talent that you lost, man, in this portal? It's going to be rough goings, rough sledding for those folks down in Tuscaloosa.
Now, granted, yes, they talented roster. They got some guys left, but they lost a lot of experience.
Yeah,
they lost a lot of guys they lost a lot of reps. Put it like that. Yeah, you know, they lost everybody. They lost was on the two deep, the three deep. You know what I mean? So we'll see how it goes. You know, I don't feel sorry for them. get it how you live.
You man, know I mean? Think it's hilarious. I think it's hilarious.
They about to pay old boy good, I'm sure. I don't know no details of his contract, but he about to have to earn it.
Oh yeah. And welcome to the SEC. You had a nice little time up there in the Pac-12. You went over there, got the parting gift for the national championship. I'm sure you got a nice little check for that. Welcome to the SEC. Welcome to SEC ball. Welcome to SEC recruiting. Welcome to the wild, wild west of college football that you've never experienced up there in Washington. So, you know, welcome to the show. It's all good. It's all good. But hey, man, let's jump into 2023. We gotta you know, kind of go back. We gotta go back to 2023. We gotta recap what was going on. We gotta recap how the Dogs did, our thoughts on that. Foss, you know, it was, I kind of want to get your thoughts. 13-1 season record, 7-0 SEC East. You know, obviously we lost the SEC championship game. Finished number 4 national rankings, number 1 recruiting class. Overall, what are your thoughts on this season that just passed? Because for some, it's going to be disappointment. For some, it's going to be, you know, we've kind of figured this might come. It's rebooting. What's your thoughts on this season?
That's a tough one. Because on one hand, I'm definitely disappointed. You know, it may sound, you know, a little harsh, you know, but I am disappointed because I expected this team to, you know, to secure the three-peat. You know what I mean? And they were, you know, they were this close to having the opportunity to play for that. And so that's what I expected. You know, this team was, you know, talented enough and well-coached enough to obtain that. And it just didn't happen. It fell short. So in that way, I'm disappointed. But at the same time, you know, my disappointment is kind of, you know, greedy. You got a 13-1 team, you know, undefeated regular season. You know, you could argue could have been in the playoff. You know, and then finished the year with the number 1 recruiting class. You know, that's like, what more could you ask for other than a championship? You know, so in that regard, I'm happy with the season. Put it like this, I'm happy with the season. I'm just not satisfied with the season.
Hmm. If that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I'll look at it from, I think, a similar standpoint. I think that everybody, obviously, going into the 2023 season, kind of felt we were playing with house money. You know, you lose your back-to-back national championship quarterback. You didn't know what to expect with Carson Beck. We didn't know how well he would play, given the circumstances, his first time starting. We lost a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. We know that, especially in the trenches. We lost some explosiveness at running back. We lost some guys that could take it to the house, some guys that were very versatile, tight ends and Darnell Washington, you know, things like that. When it came to the season, though, I don't know if I was so much disappointed in because of the way it just continued to progress. We talked about it earlier in the season when we started our shows for the season, that this was going to be a season where they just kept building and building and building. And what I was excited about was that they didn't succumb to the pressure. They didn't succumb to big games. Carson Beck continued to grow. Even through injuries, they continued to battle through injuries. That showed me a lot of this team, the fortitude of the team. Where I got disappointed, I think, was just basically in that SEC championship game. I think if we laid it all on the line in that SEC championship game and we really came to ball out, I'm talking from players to coaches, I would have had no disappointment at all in a loss. Honest, 100% facts. Because you laid it all out on the line. I think it left me just wanting just a little bit more after that SEC championship game. Then you get to, you know, obviously the Orange Bowl. All of a sudden, my hopes go back up. Just because of how this team not rededicated itself, but showed everybody that we don't back down from anybody. We just reload. And we're always coming to play. You know what I mean? So nobody opted out. It showed the culture. It showed how this team was a team. In this era, I mean, we just started off the show talking about, hey, it's the Wild Wild West. Alabama's losing people like crazy. The portal's going nuts. Georgia had already had like 19 people in the portal. All of a sudden, people thought Georgia was going to actually step back and maybe take a step back in the Orange Bowl, and it did not happen. That actually kind of rejuvenated me a little bit. At the same time, you know, we did see, like I mentioned, Carson Beck continue to grow and do his thing, but I love the growth of all the young players as well. I like the opportunity that like guys like C.J. Allen got. I think this was a year that we got a chance to see a lot of the guys we wanted to see step up and give us hope for 2024 and 2025, because we kept saying even throughout the year that this was the 2024 and 2025 team was going to be even better. And right now, it's starting to look even better than what it was in 23. So when it comes to that, how would you grade this coaching staff and the job that it did in 23?
I say, I give him an A. I give him an A. You know, it takes A plus to win the Natty. You know, but I give him an A. You know, I think they did an A job in getting this team ready to compete. You got to understand that's two back to back. You know, that's three back to back regular season. You know, undefeated seasons.
Yes, sir. You know what I mean? Yes, sir.
That's hard to do, man. That's hard. Like, just think about it, man. Just think about it outside of the championship. You know, especially in you know my day and time. Shoot, you had some conferences that didn't even have a championship game. You know, mm-hmm. So undefeated meant you're probably gonna go, you know, to the national championship game. And Georgia did that three times in a row. You know, to do that with three times in a row with all the NFL, you know, prospects that they lost and you know, transferring, you lose one of your best receivers to a playoff team. You know what I mean? He was the best receiver on that team, you know. And so, you know, and they still kept everybody together. And still figured out a way to win. You had a brand new quarterback, you know, brand new starting quarterback, a brand new offensive coordinator, and you go 12-0. Like, Like, that's big time football, man. That's big time.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because you said an A. I'm going to give him an A as well. One thing, you know, because one thing that was consistent was the defensive side of the ball, right? It's always going to be consistent. Kirby's there. I don't care who the defensive coordinator is. He's always going to have his fingerprint on something that's happening with that defensive side of the ball. Like I had already mentioned, they lost a lot of guys to the NFL and have continued to lose a lot of guys to the NFL over the last 2 years. But I'm going to switch that offensive side of the ball, because when you do talk about Carson Beck and what he did, you got to talk about Mike Bobo. There was a lot of, you know, trepidation about Mike Bobo's back. You know, Todd Monken has moved on to the NFL. Is it going to be the same style of offense? Are they going to continue to be productive? Well, guess what? They were just as productive and just as explosive in many ways. And as you mentioned, losing a wide receiver to Texas, people were like, okay, how are we going to replace these type of explosive players? He just spread the ball out all over top, you know, all over the field, especially given the fact that you lost Brock Bowers during the season. You didn't have Ladd McConkey throughout many parts of the season, at least at 100%. So when you start grading Mike Bobo, heck, you got to give him an A+ because he's not even operating with a full deck. Now you go into next season, you know, then you can grade him on any type of scale you want to grade him on, because all the talent in the world is going to be there in a running back room, the wide receiving room, the tight end room. Yes, you are losing the unicorn, Brock Bowers, but that room is still lit. And you're also going to have an explosive offensive line, a bigger, stronger, faster offensive line, in my opinion. Then you can grade Mike Bobo on a different scale. But I'm giving him an A+, no doubt about it. This team, I mean, the coaching staff was outstanding. I don't know if too many coaching staffs around the nation outside of maybe Nick Saban and what he does year to year and how he would always continue to rebuild his team that could come back and say, you know what, we lost this amount of talent over the last few years and still continue to produce at the level they produced at. That's insane. And I think folks need to appreciate that. And really, instead of, you know, kind of lamenting what happened in 23, applaud what happened in 23, because there's not very many programs out there that can be as this consistent. And as you mentioned already, Foss, still get the number one recruiting class, still reload, and still have people, you know, wanting to come out of the portal to Athens. I mean, it just doesn't happen. That goes to show what the culture of this team is and how far this team has come over the last few years with Kirby.
I don't know if it's just me, but to me, this feels like the makings of revenge. I get the vibe, and it's not revenge toward a specific team. It just is there. This Georgia team coming into 2024, I feel like they want to exact revenge against themselves for letting themselves down. And they want to make a point. You know, they want to make a point to the rest of college football that, you know, our bad. We effed up last year. You know, we about to fix that. It's kind of like a big watch this to everybody with, you know, loading up in the portal, stacking the coaching staff, getting everybody back that's coming back, getting them ready to roll, quarterback in his second starting season, had him come back. I think this is a big, you know, watch this season. And I feel like they're going to be super, super, super hungry, because a three-peat was, you know, it was this close away. You know, it was this close. You know what I mean? They definitely proved themselves to be, you know, a top team in college football. I feel like they were the best team in college football. They didn't prove it. But I think they're going to be chomping at the bit this year. Like, I can't wait for the, you know, I feel like all the hype videos for next season are going to express that. Like, I can't, you know, I'm excited about this next, you know, this next season and this team coming up. Very. You know,
what's wild is that you mentioned it's like free agency, right? Now, you play in the NFL. We've all watched the NFL for those of us who were just true football fans, you know, just watch everything that you can digest. But it's funny because some teams will load up in free agency, right? Some teams will load up and say, you know what? We got some guys whose contracts are going to end soon. We're going to lose these guys to free agency. We might as well give our last shot. Go out and get some guys, bring them in and load up and try to create a super team. I don't think George is trying to create a super team. But I agree with you. I think this is one of those get back years where they say, you know what? We're loading up. And not only are we loading up to kind of show people who we were in 2023 and what we should have been, but who we are in 2024. And mistake me, I mean, I might be wrong on this, but I think Kirby really wants to win the first 12 team playoff in a bad, bad way. If you're going to hold us out of a four-team playoff, okay, see if you can hold us out of the 12-team playoff. And not only that, we're going to stranglehold this bad boy because the guys that they picked up, obviously, in the portal are going to help. The recruiting class is going to help, obviously. Big-time pickups there. But we had some changes. You know, we got to talk about those changes. We did lose Fran Brown. Obviously, he went to Syracuse. Big ups to him, though, man, because a lot of class, a lot of integrity. I like to say integrity. Because he didn't have to go to Syracuse and then help, quote unquote, help Georgia recruit other guys. But he did kind of point them in the right direction to say, look, if you're not going to come to me, and I'd love to have you, there's only one other school that I will point you at and that, point you to, and that was Georgia. But when you do look at, hey, Dante Williams, they picked up Dante Williams as another coach for Fran Brown. But they also picked up the big dog from Alabama. We started the show off talking about Alabama, man. Oh, my gosh. Now, if this isn't a power move by Kirby, I don't know what a power move is. This is like basically just dunking on somebody and leaving what we call nuts everywhere. Because picking up Robinson and bringing him over from Alabama and making him your co-defensive coordinator, taking him out of your rival's backyard, your best recruiter, and bringing them to Georgia is insane to me, Foss. I didn't see this coming. You know, obviously a lot of people thought Glenn Schumann was going to leave at some point, at some point in time, but this is absolutely nuts. What are your thoughts on the moves of Dante Williams, obviously the West Coast recruiter, along with Mr. Robinson coming in from Alabama? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's very strategic. You know, Williams has proved himself as a great recruiter out west, and Georgia's a national brand now. You know, I spoke recently about that Bama brand. That Bama brand is what got them in the 14 playoff. Don't make no mistake about it. The Bama brand got them in the playoff, and so Georgia has become. And it's becoming more and more of one of those brands that people know nationally. Everybody knows the dogs now. I got group chats with, you know, tens of, you know, NFL buddies and NFL teammates, and everybody's following the dogs. You know, everybody wants to know what George, what do you think about the dogs, Foss? What's going to happen, this, that, and the other? And they go to other schools. Well, went to other schools and whatnot. Everybody knows the dogs. So having a foothold in different parts of the country is, you know, is paramount. You know, so I think Williams gives us that, and also bringing over T-Rob, you know, that speaks for itself. You know, that was a KO move right there, man. That was a potential knockout blow. You know, for that program, because there's, to keep guys in that program, you need a few things. You know, you need holdovers. You need guys that meant a lot to the program to stay in the program, and you got to spend that money. You know what I mean? And Nick Saban is tied to a lot of money. You know what I mean, for that program, and he is the cash cow. He's the golden goose. You know, people you know, if they're going to give money to that program, you know, it's, you know, because they trust Nick Saban is going to put it to use. You know what I mean? They don't have that anymore, you know. And then we took one of the, you know, remaining pieces that was up and coming guy that people trusted in, and we just snatched him from him. It's, hey, the game is the game. They'll do it to us in a heartbeat.
Graham, Coffee, welcome to the show, man. Look, we're recapping the 2023 season. Then we just jumped into, obviously, moving on a little bit further as they actually got Dante Williams and, you know, T-Rob. What are your thoughts on 23 and also what we just talked about? I mean, Kirby just dunking on Alabama and leaving nuts everywhere. Just leaving nuts everywhere.
By the way, both Lamar and I, we gave the dogs both an A job on how they did this season. You know, it takes A+ to win it all. You know what I mean? But we gave them an A job. You know, Bobo got an A. You know, they did wonderfully. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think, first of all, in the 2023 season, like, they had a 12-0 year, okay? That was something that Georgia had done once. Well, yeah, they went 12-0 in 1980. They went 11-0 in 81 and 82, but that's not 12-0. Like, Georgia had never gone 12-0 in a season until 2021. Or, I'm sorry, Well, they've done it 3 years in a row now, I guess. But, let's not take that for granted is more my point than anything. Like, that is a huge accomplishment. Yeah. Bobo, I have seen get all this, you know, flack basically since the SEC championship game. Look, weird, man, like, yeah, I'll say this. Amarius Mims was, you know, of all the guys that were on that field for Georgia that day, he may end up being the highest drafted of all of them. Like, losing him in the middle of that game was so impactful. And I think, you know, it made sense why kind of things got a little bit more conservative in the moments after that happened. Hindsight is always 20/20. Yes. Like, you want, you know, could Georgia have run more tempo in the second quarter and maybe had an extra 2.5 minutes to go down and kick a field goal to tie the game at the end of regulation? Sure. But, like, it's impossible to know that at the time. I think Bobo, you know, I see this sort of trend where, like, people blame him for things all the time and they rarely acknowledge, like, all of the good that he does. Nobody has talked about how different the offense that he ran for Georgia in 2023 was versus the one that he ran the first time he was in Athens. Like, the amount of pre-snap motion and the amount of reads and, like, just the conflicts that are being created are very, very impressive. They're very modern. Like, this guy is not the same coordinator that he was a decade ago when he left to go to Colorado State. Also, Carson Beck would not be the guy that he is if Mike Bobo hadn't showed up to Athens when he did. Okay. Like, there were people within that building, within that offensive staff, who were not sure if he would ever be a starting quarterback in the SEC. And he always threw a really pretty deep ball. He made those rail shots down the boundaries very nice, but his short and intermediate passing was something that they were not positive was ever going to really fully develop. And Bobo was largely responsible for getting him to the place that he got to, where early in the season, like, Carson, you know, honestly was, I think, so cautious about turnovers and protecting the ball that there were times where he took, you know, a 12-yard play when there might have been a 40-yard play further downfield. But that was the coaching, honestly, was maybe too good in some ways on teaching him how to protect the football and teaching him how to be accurate with that underneath quick passing game. And, like, that's why we're sitting here talking about 2024 Georgia as the, I think, the, you know, the unquestioned favorite for the national title next year. So all those things are good. Georgia was one of the four best teams. Georgia probably was the best team in college football. Like, Georgia and Michigan would have been a really good game. So it's hard to say anything other than an A, but you lost. And so, you know, like, look, Georgia is a big brand. They're very good. But nobody, and I do mean nobody, wanted to see them win three straight titles. And you gave the committee an opportunity to leave you out, and they did, right? Like, they did. So that is what it is. But I do think, as you kind of look at the offseason moves that are being made, like, hungry Kirby, man. Not that Kirby isn't always hungry, but, like, it's ruthless. Like, it is ruthless. I mean, the hire that was made with Dante Williams from USC, like, that was a big boy move right off the jump, right after the bowl game. Like, you're talking about one of the best recruiters in the country, okay? Like, big bodies do not grow out west. The big linemen who are athletic and can move, like you, George, they all mostly are east of the Mississippi. And you're talking about a guy in Williams who, even though he was never a defensive line coach, like, he has won recruiting battles for five-star defensive linemen against the Georgias and the LSUs of the world while out there, not while, you know, here. So, like, recruiting standpoint, best hire you probably could have made, or one of the best you could have made. People need to remember, and I think Kirby tells us this all the time when he talks about recruiting and, you know, not being able to out-coach talent, but, like, talent acquisition is 75% of the job for a college football coach. And Kirby Smart has put together the best group of recruiters that we have ever seen on staff in Athens. And I mean, I forget our friend Dustin 704 dog on Twitter, he posted something after the T-Rob hire, but, like, I'm pretty sure Georgia's defensive back seven coaches with Schumann, Williams, and Robinson now, like, in total are responsible for signing 34 five-star recruits in their careers. Like, that's ridiculous, man. A lot of coaches never sign one, even at an SEC school or a Big Ten school or wherever. So
let me interject with
– yeah, please.
Let me interject with – I think people forget about BMAC. BMAC was touted as a very, very, very good recruiter by a lot of these publications, you know, for a good while. He's been at it for a minute now, and he's a great recruiter as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, yeah, and Bobo's a great recruiter. Like, people don't realize Georgia's recruiting upgraded significantly on offense when Bobo took over for Mockett. Mockett's a genius. Look, I mean, he's interviewing for NFL head coaching jobs right now, but he was not a passionate recruiter in the same way that Mike Bobo is. Like, that wasn't really something. Like,
he got out of it when he had the opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, it's a different game. It's a different game. And like you said about Bobo, a lot of people don't know Bobo. I know him pretty well. He was, you know, when I got there, he was leaving, but he came back to be, you know, a GA when I was there, you know. So I've known Bobo 20 some odd years, and Bobo cool as a fan, man. He's gonna relate to these kids. He has a college age kid, at minimum, you know, Drew. I don't know how old his younger kids are, but he has kids that are the age of these kids that he's recruiting, and he's just always been cool as a fan. South Georgia boy, you know what I mean? He knows how to relate to these kids.
Hey, Foss, you know, you brought up something. I think Graham brought it up too. He said, you know, this is the best group of recruiters as coaches that Kirby has ever had, and that maybe the nation has seen in a long time. But again, Kirby's always playing chess when everybody else is playing checkers. We just had a legend. We just had the GOAT retire, and a lot of speculation is because he was getting tired of the process in 2023 with NIL, with the portal. Kirby, on the other hand, although he's mentioned that, you know what, we got to get some regulations on this thing. We got to get a handle on this thing, some more structure. But look at the game that he played. He just upped the ante on how many devastating recruiters he got. I mean, everybody else is status quo. I just have my guys go out there, recruit. Hey, if we got to pony up some cash, call the collective, bring some kids in. No, Kirby just didn't do that. That's just part of the game right now, right? The veil's been lifted, as we talked about last week. It's pay for play, baby. But at the same time, going out and getting the guys that know how to recruit. You still got to get kids on campus. You still got to recruit the family. You still got to recruit their future. You still got to develop. So not only that, he upped the ante on that. So when you look at Georgia's program, it's just not a bunch of guys just bringing kids in. It's guys that understand the business, and they're able to go out and close deals so that a guy like Kirby, just like Nick Saban used to do at Alabama, come in and close a deal at the last minute. That's what Kirby's doing. Coffees for closers. We've always talked about that, and that's what Kirby's doing. He's closing these deals. But I think it's a phenomenal move by him in terms of the hires that he has done and the things that he continues to do in this new era of college football.
Well, and what I would say, too, is, like, you know, I saw some Bama fans kind of talking about, like, when they lost Robinson over the weekend, there was sort of this, like, narrative that went out, and it was like, well, recruiting is just all about NIL now, and, you know, you just go, and the biggest bag is what wins. And there are recruitments that are like that, for sure, but guess what? Guess what allows you to spend your NIL money, A, the most effectively, and B, in a way that is going to preserve your culture, and C, in a way that's going to make sure that you always keep your stars that are already on your roster? It's relationships and development. Right. And the like the ability to go in and pitch guys on, you know, a 40-year decision versus a 4-year decision still matters. Like, the idea of, I'm going to get you to the NFL, and these are the guys that I've already done this for, that resonates in a room. And the idea of, like, yeah, you're going to come to Georgia, and, you know, you're going to make some NIL money that'll ensure that, you know, you live comfortably while you're here, because that's what everybody gets now. But, like, when you leave here after 3 years, you're going to sign a contract for tens of millions of dollars. That resonates, and relationships still matter in recruiting. There's this idea that you can just buy your way into any class. It's not true. Like, if that was true, then let's be honest, like, Oregon would have signed the number one class every year, and they have great recruiters on their staff. Don't get me wrong. Lanning is a fantastic recruiter. He's surrounded himself with other great recruiters, but, like, that Nike money spends really well. You know, it is a combination, but I just think people are a little naive if they think that these relationships don't matter. Look at what's happening right now with Alabama's roster. Like, look at what's happening with Caleb Downs. Like, look at what is going on with these kids, and these relationships do matter, and track record matters, like track record of development. And I think Kirby has, you know, assembled a staff where even in the NIL era, they are going to be able to get kids that come to Georgia, even though they have offers in NIL that are higher from other schools, because they know if they come to Georgia, they're going to be around coaches that they like and that are going to push them to get the most out of their talent.
I agree, 100%. I had that talk all the time, Graham. You'd be surprised. That's all that everybody ever talks about. Oh, you're a Georgia fan, and you guys are paying. Everybody's paying something. I mean, that's just the way it is now, but it's not just about that. It's about the relationship. It's about, you know, me and George were talking a little bit about the NFL as well. There's a reason why guys want to go play for Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh. It's a culture, right? There's a reason why some guys are willing to take a little bit less to go play at a certain school. It's the culture. It's everything else around what they're building, and it's not just about receiving the check. Anybody can get a check anywhere. And I'll tell you this, it's actually nice for a kid to say, you know what, I want to stay home. I'm going to go to X school, get a big check, and still get an opportunity to go to the NFL. That's a great thing. But one thing that Georgia is continuing to show, one thing that Alabama continued to show, and I guess maybe they'll bounce back after all this portal nonsense, is that some schools just do it better. And some schools are just on a different level. And sometimes you just got to respect that and build your own program up, because Georgia was once in that position until Kirby got there and said, look, we got to up the ante. We got to build our facilities up. We got to make sure we're recruiting better. We got to make sure we're dedicated in certain areas. Every school's got to do the same. So instead of just trying to knock Georgia or trying to knock some of the schools that are doing it better, figure out the blueprint. Do it yourself. Now you got the, you know, you got pay for play. You know, go to your congressman and say, hey, look, open up the checkbook and funnel the money down to the university so we can get some players too at the same time building a culture. But I think it's interesting in terms of what's happening in college football. I just love the way Georgia's showing everybody how it's done.
Yes. What I think Georgia has done and is doing better than most, I think they're staying ahead of the curve, or at least trying to stay ahead of the curve with how everything is going between NIL and portal. And I think that's why they've been successful since all of this started. What's that? What we said earlier, 2020 or so?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They've been just thinking, who's been more successful since 2020 than Georgia?
Nobody.
Nobody. Yeah. Nobody. You know, nobody's been more successful in handling this current era of college football than Georgia. And I think they're trying to stay ahead of it too. You know, whether it's, you know, NIL, I think they're handling NIL probably, you know, better than most. You know, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I think for the most part, all our big dogs have been, you know, what I assume satisfied since, you know, and we, you know, the best player we lost was AD, and, you know, we know why he left, you know, that was a decision he had to make for his family. You know, otherwise, you know, all our big dogs, everybody, all our difference makers have, you know, stayed and helped us achieve what we wanted. You know what I mean? And so that tells me that Georgia is ahead of the curve and doing everything the right way. And I don't know the ins and outs of it. I don't know the formula they're using. I don't know what the particular approach is, but you know, they're doing something right and probably doing it better than most schools.
That's a good – oh, go ahead, Graham. You going to follow up on that?
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Just going to touch upon – I mean, obviously you said they're doing it better than some schools. The portal's been around since 2020. It's gotten big. But guess what? We got new additions coming in for 2024. We've been talking about 23. We talked about the coaching changes for 24, some of the guys coming in. But when you look at the guys that they brought in, Graham, some of the key additions, Humphreys, Young, Etienne, McLeod, Jackson III, Pope, and possibly more.
Not possibly.
Definitely more.
I'm telling you, man, I'll call my shot right now, okay? Caleb Downs is going to be a Georgia Bulldog.
Uh-oh. Hold on. He's calling shots. What you got, Graham? What you got for us?
Look, man, Saturday, before anybody was talking about Caleb Downs and the transfer portal, posted a little something over on the Dog Central Forum about – I even said when I wrote it, I was like, I can't believe I'm writing this shit. Honestly, I didn't say shit on the internet. I couldn't because, you know, I just never really entertained the idea of him going anywhere, but especially not coming to Georgia. But, like, sourcing that I've talked to has been consistent since Saturday that, you know, if he left Alabama, that his camp would like to see him at Georgia. And I want to be clear, that's not coming from Georgia people. That was coming from people, you know, in the Atlanta area that are, you know, familiar with Caleb and his family and their thought processes. But if you look at how this has played out. There was this flurry of like anxiety kind of today, I think, from some Georgia fans after he hit the portal, where it was like all of a sudden, like, he's going to Ohio State, or no, he's going to Texas, and this is going to be an NIL thing. And I'm sure NIL will be a factor in any recruitment at all at this day and age. But look, man, like, look at that kid's pedigree, okay? Like, his father was an NFL player, his older brother just had an excellent year with the Houston Texans. Like, that kid wants to go to the league and he wants to get developed. And he knows that if you want those things, like we were just talking about, Athens is the place to get that now. You know, he went to play for a legendary coach who has developed some legendary defensive backs. I think he was the best defensive back talent that Alabama had had since like Marlon Humphrey. Now he's going to go, you know, find the place to do that again. You know, where's the best spot in college football now? If you're especially if you're a DB, where do you want to go to get developed? You got to go to Georgia.
You want to go play for Georgia.
Yeah.
You know, I did say Saban, but Saban ain't coaching no more. You know, right. You want to go play for Saban or you want to play for Kirby Smart. And there's like, it's a no brainer. You know, I'm pretty sure whatever Georgia has to do to make it happen, they'll make it happen. We're not talking about a good player. We're talking about a generational talent here. And so it's definitely up to the kid, 100%. Because I believe Georgia, short of, you know, trading Kirby for him, you know, they will do what they have to do to get the kid to come. And he's local. You know, it would only make sense. And I'm being real with you, why not join another first round safety? You know, that
absolutely.
You know, that makes everybody look good. You know.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, he'll get to play against probably another potential first round safety in Bolden after Starks leaves. You know, I mean, Caleb's got 2 years left. If he does come to Athens, which I think he is, I mean, that's an insane proposition. Like, I was, you know, the word generational gets thrown around way too much on the internet when we talk about football players. If you put Caleb and Starks on the back end of your defense next year, that is a generational safety tandem, in my opinion. I would have to think, like, since, you know, 2001 Miami, or, you know, like, we're talking something like that, right?
Reed and Taylor. Let me tell you about, like, I tout myself as someone that can recognize talent. I know it probably gets, you know, tougher to project these young kids to high college, high NFL production. But when I was made aware of this kid when he was in high school, and to see his tape, it came across my eyes. I was like, I want him to go to Georgia. Yeah. I was like, where do we stand on this kid? Like, I hit my homeboy. My homeboy's, you know, a great coach here in Atlanta for Wood Academy. Coach, shout out to Coach Ryan Davis. I was like, who's this kid right here? And he was like, yeah, he's a dog. And I'm watching the tape, and I'm like, yeah, that's a pro. That's a pro. Like, I've seen this before. Like, I saw Eric Berry play in high school. I said, this is Eric Berry again. Eric Berry was an all pro NFL safety. And
he was when he was in Tennessee.
Downs played everything just like Berry did. You know, like, I was looking at it, I was like, this is Eric Berry again. Like I said, like, that's where I watched Eric Berry just take over games. Like, he was playing quarterback, corner, safety.
He was like,
Eric Berry was ridiculous. He gets left out of conversations, but like, he was absurd at safety.
That's the best safety I've ever watched in person. Was Eric Berry by far?
I don't doubt it. You know what I mean? Yeah. He was on his way before all the injury. But I felt like I was watching Eric Berry over again. And I was like, I want this guy to go to Georgia. I was, you know, when it got closer to time, you know, I was made aware that he's probably not going to Georgia. I was, you know, I hated it. You know what I mean? I never thought I'd see him again. You know, definitely not in a Georgia uniform, like I'm hoping happens soon. But even I have a cousin that, you know, that trains DBs. He played he played at James Madison. He's in there, Hall of Fame or whatever you call it. He's, you know, Clint Kent, and he trains DBs down here in Georgia. And I tweeted out just out into the world. I was like, I wonder what that Downs ticket is gonna be. I said, I know it's gonna be hot. And he come in and he was like, cuz it's worth every penny. He said he's the best I've ever been around.
Okay. I got a question. He
was an all whatever, you know, in the CFL. Like my cousin, he knows he sees him. He played for Winnipeg up there with Terrence Edwards, and like he knows ballers. He said he's the best I've ever been around.
All right, Foss. Look, we had Champ Bailey on earlier in the year, right? And I remember asking Champ this question. I said, is it natural ability or can you train what you had, right? When you look at Caleb, when you look at his play, when you look at what he does at safety, sideline to sideline, speed to explosiveness, strength, all that other kind of stuff, from the people that you've talked to, what is it with him? Is it just natural ability? Is it film work? Is it development over time? You've seen a lot of talent. You've had to scout a lot of talent. What is it with Caleb, in your opinion?
For me, it's just the instincts. And he was tough as nails. You know, I didn't get to watch a lot of Bama games this year with him. You know, but it's just in high school, it was the instincts, the toughness. He was just, you know, his athleticism. And you can see it when he was on offense, you know. And, like, one thing I noticed when I started as an NFL scout, of course, like, the trenches came easy to me. The Freddie move out, then it took some time for me to get able to evaluate the outside and the deep end, you know, as much as I would like. You know, to get as good as I would like to get and to get my style down and evaluating. One of the reasons for safety was a lot of safeties don't do much. And you're still responsible for coming up with an evaluation. So if they make three plays out of 75, you better be able to evaluate them off those three plays. You know, you got to watch them when the ball doesn't come their way. You got to watch them in the run. You got to watch them. Like, a lot of safeties don't pop off the screen. The safeties that do pop off the screen, special. Those are the guys that, like, when I watch Ed Reed, they pop off the screen. They always want to get involved. You find a lot of DBs, they don't want no smoke. You know, if it don't come to them, they don't want no smoke. If they want to, you know, if they see the ball and they run to the ball, they hoping somebody else make the tackle. You know what I mean? I used to be watching tape with my mom. I said, man, this kid, this cat, he love to come to the party, but he don't want to dance. You know what I mean? You know, some people, they jump off the screen and they want to dance. You know, they want to come to the party. They want to go to the party fast, and they want to cut a rug. You know, those are the special safeties. You know, he was special. You know, he wasn't just out there. He wasn't playing safety. He was playing enforcer. You know what I mean?
Go ahead, Graham. You're going to say something about Caleb?
Oh, I mean, I think Foss just – I mean, you said it all really well, man. Like, he is one of those where you turn on a football game and you can't help but watch him. You stop watching the football at times because you just the way he moves is different than anybody else. He doesn't take bad steps, and he's so smooth. I wasn't a pro scout. Yeah. What?
Yeah, no wasted motion.
Yeah.
Like I said, I didn't watch a lot of Bama games. With the teaching he probably got there, ain't no telling how great he is now. It's probably it's ridiculous.
I mean, he's sick, man. I mean, you saw him in the national championship game. Like, you saw him with you saw him lock down Bowers at times. I know that Brock wasn't 100%, but, like, Brock not 100% roast most safeties. We saw him do it all the time. Like, I just think you talk about a guy that, from a talent standpoint, like, he might be in that conversation with a Champ Bailey kind of player. Like he's as good as a player as, somebody that's in college right now might have seen at Georgia in their lifetime on the back seven of the defense, or the back – I shouldn't say the back seven, because, I mean, Roquan, some of those linebackers, that's a different conversation. But he's that dude. And when I did our my written preview for the SEC championship game, like, don't get me wrong, I predicted Georgia to win. I thought that Georgia was going to be able to do things that they were unable to do when, some of those receivers were not healthy for UGA. But with Downs, man, like, when you start thinking about how a game plays out, like, it's basically like, well, let's just take that piece. Whoever he's covering, that piece is off the board. Like, the ball is not going there more than likely. It's like maybe you get one on him, but it's going to be tough to really make any plays on him. If he lines up over a guy, then that guy probably doesn't need to be the primary read, I think that it's just – I mean, dude, it's hard to – you kind of run out of intangibles or whatever. But when I wrote about him, I was like kind of going through Bama's secondary, and it's like, this guy's got that weakness, and this guy, you might be able to do this against him or whatever. And then you get to Downs, and it's like, this guy's going to be he's going to be an all-pro for a decade maybe if nothing, goes the wrong way. And – if you get a play on him, anything you get on him is a bonus. Like, that's something that you probably didn't plan to get, and you got it, and you should be happy to have had it, really. So,
what's funny, Graham, is you mentioned that when you turn on the tape, you can't help but see him. Mm-hmm. There's certain guys, there's only a handful of guys that are like that, especially when you're looking at, the defensive side of the ball, right? I don't know how old anybody is. If you're listening, if you're watching, Lawrence Taylor was like that, right? No matter who they played, you wanted to watch Lawrence Taylor play. Dion, he's on the field. I'm watching the defense play. Yes. I'm watching Ed Reed play. Pittsburgh. I'm watching Troy Polamalu play. When you watched Alabama this season, I could care less about the offense. The offense was his vanilla. Mm-hmm. Milroe had his moments. But you wanted to see the defense play, and we were SEC junkies, right? We watch everything. We watch everything that we could find in terms of college football, especially you, Graham. I mean, you watch it West Coast, Division III ball. That's you watch everything. But when you're watching Alabama, Downs just jumped off the screen, man. I mean, he was sideline to sideline in the box deep. He was everywhere. You match him.
15.
What's that?
You're watching 2 and 15.
Yeah.
To see what they're doing.
And when you match him with Starks, oh my gosh. I mean, I'm going to have to shower after this show, man. I got to shower. I'm getting hot. Because when you match him up with Starks on the back end, I dare you. I double dog dare you to throw the ball deep against Georgia next year, because it's not happening. Mm-hmm. You're going to get that thing picked. And you're going to get somebody hurt. You're going to get your quarterback hurt. If I were you, I'd just try to run the football. You're going to get somebody hurt with some stupidity like that, because these guys are special. Both of those guys are going to be first-round picks, early first-round picks for their talent. And we're not even talking about some of the other places, some of the trench guys, the linebackers, and things like that. But Graham, you called your shot. I'm going to stick with it. I rock with you. Hey, Mr. Downs comes to town, I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
Hey, man, I'm just going to say this too. And I'm not necessarily saying this in relation to Georgia, but like I've been watching the Twitter reaction all day as Alabama fans went from 24 hours ago being like, DeBoer is assembling one of the best staffs in the history of college football to it's unfair that the transfer portal is open for 30 days after Nick Saban retired. And I'm telling you guys, I don't know how many Alabama fans watch this show, probably not a ton, but it ain't over yet, man. I mean, I posted about a D lineman on the forum an hour or two ago that I'm hearing might transfer from Bama. Jason just posted about another defensive front seven player that might transfer, a former five-star. Like, it's ugly, dude. And
I told Marla, the boy better get a tourniquet. He thought I was BS. You better get a tourniquet right now because it's bleeding. And it's not, I told him, it's not over.
I said, Corey, did you say this on Twitter?
Yeah. I say, you better get a tourniquet. He better get a tourniquet. It can get, you don't think it get worse? It could get real.
Oh, 20 days bro. Left.
Just it's 20 days.
Yeah. Nah, dog. And I mean, like, I almost feel like
it could get Mike Shula bad.
Yeah, I mean, I almost do feel bad for the guy because you look at this situation and you're talking about, I mean, yeah, you followed the GOAT. And so it's going to be impossible to succeed when you're talking about being compared to what has just happened there. But like, I think there was a couple swing moments here where the narrative could have really shifted in his favor of like, man, T-Rob, you know, he came back, you know, that 4-hour meeting that he had with DeBoer, like he saw the vision, he saw the light, he believes, because he stayed, Caleb Stan, he's a team leader, he's going to rally these other guys to stay. Like Downs is a domino, but T-Rob was the domino that fell first. And you talk about what Kirby is doing here, man. Like, it's savage because he knew exactly like which little Jenga stick to pull out of the tower to make things start to wobble. And it is like it is. And I think Downs leaving, you're talking about a guy who, as a true freshman, led the team meetings and like stood up in front of everybody and said, we need to be on our stuff. And, you know, like, a right way kind of guy, not just a talent, but like a leader with talent. And then that guy goes and it's just like, man, you know, what are we doing here exactly? And it's not as like Kane Womack is a very good football coach, right? Like he is. The guy they hired from Buffalo, like, let's be honest, man. If I was the coach at Buffalo and I had just come off a 3-9 season, which was the worst record at the program since 2016. I'd be pulling that ripcord if an Alabama offer came my way. I'm not saying that's the only reason, you know, why they hired him or why he left or anything like that. I'm just saying like that move made sense, but it just goes to show you, like, if you're a Georgia fan and you're watching this, understand that what you have in Kirby is, you know, now it's probably the most like established coach in the country. You know, you could argue Dabo, but Dabo's resume has fallen off a good bit in the last few years. But it's just like, understand the value in what you have in Kirby Smart by watching what has happened with Saban leaving and a guy who just played for a national title came in, and still you're seeing this like this drop off in talent wanting to leave. And it's not because Kalen DeBoer is a bad coach. It's just because he's not Nick Saban. And that is what you've got right now in Athens. You've got a dude that is like that, where it's like he's even amongst great coaches, he is on another tier above, and everybody wants to come there. And I think, you know, Kirby's looking at this as like, man, you know, now I get my era to dominate the sport for, you know, 5, 7, 10 years. And then I'm going to take it to the lake house. I'm not going to coach till I'm 72 like my mentor did, you know. And I think that, like, he will. I think that even in this 12-team era, what is happening is self-perpetuating. Like, the a down saying, hey, Nick Saban retired, there's only one other guy that I want to go play for, like, that – that just makes the next kid, the 2025, 2026 recruit, be like, I got to play for that dude because Caleb Downs played for that guy. Like, and, you know, that snowball, it rolls downhill for Georgia, but it also rolls downhill for Kalen DeBoer at Alabama. Like, those guys leaving, it's just, that is a tough way to start a coaching tenure, man, especially when you are assembling a staff where, I mean, Womack is an Alabama guy, but, like, they are not heavy on dudes with recruiting relationships in the Southeast. Like, I, in a way, I know that DeBoer just had this great year at Washington, but, like, in a way, I think that they would have been better off hiring a coach with, you know, maybe less success on his recent resume, but more experience in the Southeast, more ties to guys on that roster and the high schools that they came from and all of that. Like, you know, if Glenn Schumann showed up at Alabama, you know, I don't know. You're talking about a guy that's not has not been a head coach before, but, like, if they hired Dan Lanning, I don't think this would be happening on the same level. I'll put it that way. And if Dan Lanning was hired for that job, I think he, you know, would have assembled a staff that maybe some of these guys might, you know, meet and greet and say, I'm going to play for that guy because he's done X, Y, and Z before.
Graham, you couldn't have said it better, but I'm going to go one step further because me and Foss talked about this last week.
I know.
I'm not saying Kalen's a bad coach at all. Great job out there at Washington. He assembled a great amount of talent. He used Penix for a couple years, elevated the program. Obviously, the guy knows what he's doing in terms of coaching football. But following Nick Saban, you better get that hire right. And not only get the hire right, because he might be a great coach, but there's other things at play when you're going to Alabama in the SEC conference. There's bigger things at play when you're playing underneath that Alabama logo. We said it last week. Maybe the right decision might have been Mike Locksley, somebody that's affiliated with the program, that understands SEC recruiting, understands SEC coaches, can assemble a coaching staff around him that's going to be loyal to him, loyal to the program. You would have maintained some semblance of who's there and not had this mass exodus of players leaving, but you didn't. And I'm not saying that he's not going to be successful at Alabama. So, Alabama fan, calm down. But what you are seeing is what Graham just mentioned. You lose Nick Saban. Well, who's the next guy that's closest to Nick Saban? It's Kirby Smart over at Athens. Yeah. Who's the guy that's building a program or has already built a program that's much like Alabama? Kirby Smart. Who is the same guy now that's won 2 national championships in the last 2 years or 3 years that should have had a third opportunity? Kirby Smart. Who's the guy that we've talked about that's building things up for this new era of college football that's done it at an elite level with the portal, with NIL, with maintaining the core amount of players? Kirby Smart. So where do you go? If you really are interested in winning national championships, you can get NIL money anywhere. You can portal anywhere you want. Somebody's going to pony up and give you the cash. Somebody's going to put money in your pocket. Somebody's going to take care of you for most of us, for a lifetime amount of money. But there's only one program right now that's going to do it the way that Alabama, which you were just at, is doing. And that's Kirby Smart in Georgia. I can't fault any kid for wanting that same personality of program, that same type of culture. Some of these guys that have left the program, you can't fault them. And so when you do look at a guy like Caleb Downs or anybody else that's coming from that program that's thinking about portaling, I want to go somewhere where it's similar, where I'm going to be comfortable, where I know I'm going to be wanted, where I know I'm not going to take a step back, because that's the other thing too. You can portal out and go somewhere and take a massive step back in terms of development and hope that your foundation was created at Georgia like some of these kids do. Kirby talked about it, I think, last week when he was talking about how he applauds a kid if he wants to go into the portal, maybe go somewhere and get an immediate amount of playing time. But I guarantee you, those guys that are going some of those other places, their foundation is much better than the places that they're going to. These Alabama kids and anybody else that's joining Georgia is getting an upgrade to where maybe they were at with Alabama. But I tell you what, they ain't down, you know, downgrading like they would have been had they just stayed at Alabama. Because that's probably what's going to happen for the next couple years. I feel bad for Bama fan. But hey, you know what? You've had your run. You've had your fun time. You had the GOAT. Now we got that guy in Athens. And I'm just, you got to applaud that, man. No doubt about it.
I think the issue, I don't know if y'all touched on it. I think the issue that Bama had is just the turnover that they would have. And so there's nobody that's really been there to take over like that, you know, that has some cachet, as you would say, or with the program, with the players, that would have made the transition seamless.
You know what I mean? Do you think, like, I've pondered this today. Love to hear y'all's perspective on it. Do you think Saban kind of hurt Bama, obviously unintentionally, but do you think that he kind of hurt Bama by waiting as long as he did to announce? Like, I think if he announced his retirement, even though I know they had a playoff to get ready for, if he had announced his retirement then, and, you know, Bama had named a successor, and, you know, that successor comes in and works with some of these guys in the lead up to the CFP, and like there's some transition, or you know, even if Saban had announced earlier in the year, or they had found somebody that they felt like, hey, we're going to hire you, you're going to be a position coach in 2023, like a Schumann. Like if they had said, Glenn, you're an Alabama alum, your father played for Bear Bryant, or grandfather, one of the two, come here. You're going to coach the defense in 2023, and then at the end of the season, Nick's going to retire. We're not going to make any of this public, but at the end of the season, Nick's going to retire, and you're going to take over. Like, I think that the vast majority of these guys that are hitting the portal probably aren't, but I think that the shock of going, you know, A, of this happening when it did, like, with the portal basically closed for everybody but Alabama, it really hurts, because like, it's just it's a perception. Perception is reality in recruiting. We talk about this a lot in college football, and right now you are losing players. Every time we get on Twitter, somebody's tweeting so-and-so is in the portal, but you're not in a spot where you can go and get a bunch of players because the window is basically closed for everybody except for the Washington and Arizona kids, you know? So it's just this stream outwards, and the perception of it is not good. Do you think that Nick should have maybe handled this differently? Or was it just, you know, I mean, obviously he has the right to do whatever he wants, but what do y'all think?
Go ahead, George.
That's a tough question, because I think there's a great possibility that maybe he didn't know. Like, that's a big you can call it life changing, because it's been his life for since the 80s, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, this has been his life, you know, on this scale, it's been his life for 17 years or so. Like, it's a life changing, you know, decision. You know, got a really good recruiting class that was coming in, you know, that could have been you know, persuasive. Okay, what can these kids do? So maybe he didn't come to that conclusion too late, you know. But it's also a possibility that they did know, but like who's gonna be your replacement if it's, you know, if it's the if DeBoer is as good as, you know, people, you know, say he is, maybe he was on the radar, even if, you know, even if he's still in the, even if in the playoff, mm-hmm. you know, maybe he's still on the radar. Maybe we can pluck him from Washington, and then you're still in the same position, you know, right. as you are now.
George, so,
you know,
I got to disagree. I think that in this situation, just much like Nick said, life just comes at you too fast. And I think that, like, Kirby has been, I guess, on the cutting edge of knowing and understanding how this thing was going to transition. Nick didn't think so. Nick, who has been a legend for so long and basically in the driver's seat of being able to get any guy he wants, any player he wants. Right. Again, you're like the godfather. You sit back and you say, go handle this and bring me my money. Go handle this and bring me my money. Now, all of a sudden, you got to get out there and work. You got to roll up your sleeves. I think much like what he said, this year was a grind. You already come off COVID, right? COVID did a lot for people. It did a lot for people around the entire country outside of football. Then all of a sudden the portal comes in and then you're hit with NIL on top of it. Having to deal with kids and re-recruit kids that are already in your program, and you're the big dog and you got to do that, I think it really came at him too hard, too fast. Now, much to answer Graham's question, I think Alabama failed themselves, thinking that the brand was bigger than the situation. Had you known that Nick was 72 years old and really thought about it, you would have said to Nick, look, we know you got a lifetime contract, brother. You could be here till you're 95, whatever it may be. But you got to identify your successor. We got to bring him in-house, label that guy, know that he's that guy, pay that guy, so that when you move on and when you feel it's time, we seamlessly transition to this new guy. They didn't do that. They thought the Bama brand was big enough to pull whoever they want to pull. And when Lanning dipped out, when some of these other guys, you know, gave him the Heisman, now all of a sudden, where do we go? Now you choose to go outside of the SEC? It doesn't bode very well for guys that come from outside of the SEC who have no idea of what this animal is like, especially given today's climate. I feel bad for DeBoer because, yes, he's dealt with NIL. He's dealt with the portal at Washington. It's a little bit different when you're playing in Alabama and you're playing or you're coaching in Alabama and you're coaching in the SEC conference. It's a little bit different and you better have all the pieces in play. And I think Bama did themselves a vast injustice of not allowing themselves to identify the next guy ahead of time and sitting down with Nick and saying, you pick your successor. That would be my opinion on that.
You make a good point. Yeah. Maybe they could have did themselves a favor with getting with Nick and being like, hey, help us with this, you know, yeah. like ahead of time. And I don't think they ever, maybe they never were able to get that person. Like it from what I've learned and heard over the years about working at Bama, it wasn't easy. You know what I mean? Maybe they couldn't secure that guy. You know, Kirby was built for it. You know, and he might as well have been one of, you know, you know what I mean? And so he might as well have been a son to, you know, to Saban. And so he had been with him so long that, you know, maybe, you know, he's the only one that probably could have stepped in like that and been the guy. Since then, like, they've had so much turnover. You got guys going to the NFL. You had, you know, whether it's O coordinators, D coordinators. You got guys rolling in and out of there, in and out of there. You got Kiffin. You got Bill O'Brien. You got wasn't my guy? Wasn't Mel down there?
Sarkisian?
Tucker.
DC?
Mel Tucker, yeah.
Yeah, was Mel. So you had Mel, you had Sark, you had like all these guys are, shoot, they're coaches or have been coaches. You know, they, you know, when you win at that high level, you lose guys. And Georgia has been lucky to not lose at the pace that Bama was losing guys. You know, I thought Schumann had been gone. You know what I mean? Yeah, you know, Lanning, you know, you had to assume he was going to be out of there. You know what I mean? But he, you know, maybe he stayed around longer than you probably could have thought. Like, everybody that could have been, you know, like, put it like this. If Kirby would retire tomorrow, I think the guys on the roster, it's on the staff to take over. You know,
agree.
Bama, who's that going to be the last 5, 6, 7 years? Who was that?
That's the problem.
No, yeah. Nobody. Like, nobody.
Right.
Like, you know what he's like, I mean, man?
They need to sit down with Nick and, you know, pretty much say, hey, we don't have the guy on the staff right now. Can you help us identify that guy in the country?
You know what Alabama, I mean? Foss, is kind of like, you know, having a rich parent where, you know, you go out there and you squander money and everything else, and then you come back home and they're like, oh, yeah, you can come home anytime you want, but you got to abide by my rules and you can only be there a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Then you got to go back out again and go party all your money away, then come back. You can't stay there forever. I think that's the environment that Nick created, because it's a pressure cooker for where he was at. And they just didn't have that guy on staff. They couldn't keep that guy. I mean, it's a lot of turnover, much like you said. So
yeah, when you win, you're gonna lose guys. You know, he had a rehab going on there. You know, I mean, you go there, win with Nick, you go get a good job.
Yeah, you know Butch, I mean? Jones. I mean, even right. Butch Jones walked out of there with a head coaching job. Where did Sark go when alcoholism?
Where did Jones go?
He's at Arkansas State.
That's what Butch Jones is?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's the head coach there. But, I mean, Sark, man, like, wow. Nobody thought he would ever be a head coach again when he showed up. Sark rehab, like,
man.
Kiffin was,
he was good for them. I think the issue was, you know, Nick stayed around too long.
Yeah,
maybe.
Like all the potential. I still think they should have tried to get Locks. You know what I mean? But all the potential, replacements, you know, that they left years ago. You know what I mean? Like I said, he stayed around, and not that he was far from too old. He seemed like a guy that was always in great shape. You know what I mean? But you know, he's like, at the end of the day, he stayed around too long. You know,
I mean, the interesting thing, man, that I've been talking to people about is, like, he's got an office in Bryant-Denny Stadium now. You know, which, like, if you're a recruit, like, I think in a way, this idea of, like, okay, we're going to get, like, I've been told, like, Nick, you know, like, they're bringing Nick in to talk to some of these kids that are talking about transferring out of the program. Like, you know, like, they're bringing in him to help with some of this stuff. Right. And like, that to me feels like, man, like, you guys are kind of stuck with a foot in both worlds here. And in a way, it's like, for DeBoer, I would almost be like, okay, this is what we're doing. This is my vision. If you want to be a part of it, great. We'd love to have you here. If you don't, also fine. Get the guys in the boat that believe in what you want to do, and then, you know, start moving forward in a linear direction instead of sort of being stuck between two philosophies, which I think they have the danger of having that happen with Nick kind of lingering around, because he is such a powerful figure. You know, I think DeBoer obviously does not have a reputation as a recruiter. I mean, he signed the 36th best recruiting class last year at Washington. And I think the year before that, they were in like the 70s or something crazy like that. Like, I went through his roster.
I think last year was better than the playoff year.
It was. Yeah. I mean, like, look, man, the roster that they just played in the CFP with, I did the analysis of it when he got hired. One moment. So if you look at the team that he took to the national championship game, and this is a credit to him in some ways, of the 22 starters, only two were recruited to Washington by his staff. Both of them were transfers. Michael Penix, the quarterback, Dylan Johnson, the running back. There were 30 players on the team that played 10 or more snaps in the CFP championship against Michigan. Zero of those guys were recruited to Washington out of high school by the DeBoer staff. That's insane to think about. Now, it's a credit for him taking what was there and making something really great out of it. But like Chris Peterson really recruited the vast majority of these guys. Only eight of the 30 players who had 10 plus snaps in that national title game were brought in by DeBoer staff at all. And all of those guys were transfers. So all but one of their defensive starters committed to Washington when Chris Peterson was still the head coach there. Like, so, I mean, that bodes well in a way for him to be able to take what's left over from Nick and do good things with it. It does not bode well for Alabama continuing to be a team that recruits a top three class every year, like they did for the last freaking 15 seasons in a row. What'd you say?
Does this smell like Clemson?
Whoo.
Ah.
Think God. About it.
You cutting deep tonight, Foss.
No. When's the last top three Clemson class?
Oh, never. They never recruited one with Dabo. I mean, even when they were doing their best, they were recruiting like, you know, on the fringe of the top five, eight, top six, seven, eight, yeah, that kind of thing.
They have that now?
No, I ain't doing that now.
Yeah.
Well, now you know why they didn't bring in Dabo.
There's been some drop off, put it like that. Facts. For Clemson. Yeah. Wherever they used to land, there's been drop off.
For sure. Facts. And I think for DeBoer, man, like I feel like being stuck between those two philosophies we were just talking about, like that could be a dangerous place. But what's interesting is, you know, I was talking to Keith Marshall last night, you know, with the Players Lounge, who played for Georgia. And, you know, Keith was a five-star running back. Like he was, you know, a modern era recruit who was highly sought after. And obviously he ended up at Georgia, but Florida was one of his top schools when he was in high school. And I was talking to him about this transfer situation at Bama and kind of saying like, yeah, you know, I've heard they're bringing Saban in to talk to some of these kids. And he was like, man, I remember getting on an airplane to go to Florida for my official visit, or not official, but my visit, whatever it was, with the staff. When I got on the airplane, Urban Meyer was the head coach there. When I landed, he had announced his retirement from Florida. And he was like, I got there and he met with me and he was like, you know, I'm not going to be handling the day to day, but I'm going to be here. I'm going to have an office in the stadium. I'm going to be around. And he was like, man, you know, 2 months later, like, I think he, you know, stopped coming into that office or whatever. And pretty soon he was the head coach at Ohio State. Right. And he was like, obviously none of us expect Nick to coach again. Point being though, like that man bought a $27 million vacation home in Florida. He probably wants to live in it, you know? And I just think I wrote the article this week about this hire of Travaris Robinson. That's fishy the way that played out. Okay. Like T-Rob met with DeBoer on Friday night. And after that conversation, he resigned from the Alabama staff because he did not get the answers that he needed to get about his role moving forward. He gets announced at Georgia 10:30 a.m. the next morning. And then that night, he's being asked to come and have a 4-hour interview on Sunday with DeBoer. If DeBoer didn't think he was the guy to be his defensive play caller on Friday night, why did he suddenly think that by Saturday night and Sunday morning? It feels like, you know, if you're going to hire the guy to do the job, you probably ought to let him do the job. I know that Nick's the GOAT, but he's not the coach anymore. Like, let the guy that you hired try and assemble his own staff and do his own thing. That's just my two cents, though.
Facts. Well, fellas, we done gone through the 23 season, given some updates on the 24 season, gotten people excited for the 24 season. It's been a heck of a show. But before we go, just something real quick, we got to give a shout out, man. Georgia basketball is balling. If you ain't following, you better follow. Now they start to turn it up. Mike White's turning things up. You know, big victories against, you know,
Mark, hit the explosion.
Boom. Oh, you need an explosion?
I need an explosion. Right. Mike White.
There you go.
Mike White.
Big-time victories against Arkansas. Big-time victory against South Carolina. They played Tennessee tough. People forget about that.
White Mike went to Columbia last night and got busy.
Mike White's got that revenge body. Revenge body. Looking good, man.
Mike went in there, beat a 2-loss team. You dig? Them boys finished it for a minute. I was like, please don't turn into the Tennessee game. Please.
I know.
They bounced back.
Definitely bounced back, man.
That was a big win coming off that disappointment the other day.
Yes.
You know, because they should have won that Tennessee game.
There you go. You know what I mean?
They didn't get the stops that they needed to get in crunch time. And but they did in this game. Big block by Demery at the end. They did what they were supposed to do at the end of the game. So I'm encouraged. Like hopefully they are putting together a great resume for some postseason basketball. Been a minute since I've seen some March Madness from the dogs. From the men, rather.
Yeah. I mean, a good sign for Georgia basketball is that they went on the road last night and beat a 14-2 team in a game where they had their lowest effective field goal percentage of the season on offense. Like, that was probably their worst offensive game of the season, but defense, rebounding, and they made their free throws. And that travels. That'll win you a lot of basketball games. I think that's the exciting thing about this is that they've shown they can win games in different ways. And they're going to Rupp on Saturday. That's going to be tough.
But you know what? This is actually a winnable game for them. A lot of people are like, okay, we're going to, you know, playing at Rupp Arena. But Cal is Cal. Coach Cal is Coach Cal. He's going to have his mixture of, you know, one and doneers. He's going to have his seniors there. They got a team that can be very streaky. It's talking about the same team and that lost to, you know, North Carolina Wilmington and lost bad.
Shout out Wilmington.
There you go, Graham. Yeah, but I mean, they lost bad to them. I mean, I think they're bouncing back tonight. I think they're playing Mississippi State right now, beating them down pretty good. I think they're up by 16 at the current time. But Mike White's got those boys balling, man, in a nasty way. And again, Graham, like you mentioned, defense and rebounding, much of which got him pushed out of Florida because they wanted a more exciting brand of basketball. But he's bringing this team to playing a sound team style basketball while bringing them along with offensively, being efficient offensively. They're doing what they got to do. So we got to get, you know, big shout out to Mike White. It's time to bring them boys onto the podcast as well. I got some ends over there, so we'll have some guys
coming up. And White might be recruiting too. They got some guys coming in there. They got some real dudes. Yeah. They're getting like some dudes coming in there. So yes, yeah, they're pretty good this year. But you know, I think next year is when the real, when it gets really real. Yeah, and we're talking about competing. You know, because college basketball is a little different now, man. Like, it could go to anybody. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, a championship is 20 teams deep, but like, you can make some noise. Mm-hmm. You can make the top, you know.
I mean, Butler went to the national title 2 years in a row. Like,
yeah, you can make some noise now.
One player can change everything.
But Foss, it's much like we talked about last week, where you had the Saban effect in Alabama, and all of a sudden the Alabama basketball program came up. Right now, you got the Kirby effect in the football program, bringing that energy to Athens, and all of a sudden things start to turn for a lot of different programs. And the easiest program for it to turn around to is the basketball program, because those guys kind of, they connect, they jive the right way. You know what I'm saying? And recruiting, especially now.
Florida got good at basketball while their football team was good.
Facts.
You know, it could definitely have an effect on other sports too.
Facts. All right, fellas, that's it for tonight then. Hopefully next week we'll be able to talk a little bit more in terms of portal guys, in terms of the basketball program. But until then, as always, see you at 100 Sanford. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you like. Make sure you forward on the show to everybody. Yes. Always make sure you do that. But see you at 100 Sanford. Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.
Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dawgs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100Sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.